This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Radio Storm Center, there are a numbers of school delays, including looking at here, if you go Butler County, Slippery Rock area, then south, Steel Valley, two-hour delay, Still Rocks, two-hour delay, Trinity area, two-hour delay. The entire list is available at kdkaradio.com anytime, and that is due to the cold. With that 9-degree reading and with the wind factored in, it feels like it's just below zero. So in the next 2 hours, not much will change in terms of the temperature. But what I was told in the past, Paul, was this also allows most of the school buses are diesel powered, and the diesel fuel starts to gel.
So that's
They need to kind of warm up. And that's one of the factors. And certainly kids walking and being out at the bus stop for an extended period of time can be a concern.
Which makes me wonder about the 18-wheelers with those saddle gas tanks. And they're running on diesel as well, right? You wonder how they keep it from gelling up. There must be a product they can mix in with their fuel, I would assume.
Yeah, so that said, some two-hour delays due to the extreme cold, and it doesn't look like we'll go above freezing until maybe Saturday now, where we can expect a high of 37.
So, that's even better than what I saw yesterday. Yeah, one of them was like 32 yesterday when I last checked.
They bumped it up a little bit, which is good because we need to get above freezing here at some point.
Exactly.
But I'm looking at this Arctic air mass that has sagged south across the lower 48, and the cold temperatures are going to push well south. In fact, they've had issues because of flooding and tornadoes before the real cold air moved in.
Yeah, Kentucky got hit really hard, Larry.
Kentucky got hit hard. They said it was one of the worst weather issues they've ever experienced in Kentucky. And then all the way over to Atlanta, where there were multiple tornadoes, and one man was killed by a tree that fell into his home. So it has been a very active and very challenging winter so far for many. This Delta flight number 4819, en route from Minneapolis, landing in Toronto, crashing, flipping over, upside down. It's so rare to see this, Paul.
Yeah.
A fuselage intact without the wings upside down, but as you pointed out, this model aircraft was designed to do that.
In fact, that'll be our report at 6:30 from the reporter in Toronto about how it's designed to do exactly what you said.
80 passengers on board, including the flight crew, 80, and 18 injured, 3 critically, including a child, but all at this point have survived miraculously.
Here's one of the passengers, Larry. His name is Pete Carlson.
Everyone seemed not oddly calm, but everyone seemed like they were there to make sure we helped each other and, moved out of harm's way. most powerful part of today was there was just people, no countries, no nothing. It was just people together helping each other.
Wow.
Powerful statement. And the fact that the flight crew is getting accolades for acting swiftly in the moment to make sure everybody got off the aircraft.
What goes through my mind about that angle of this story is that these flight attendants in particular have been trained and drilled over and over again to respond in an emergency situation like this, but most of them never even come close to having to use those skills. And can you imagine how all that training kicks in and you're still dealing with your own concerns and worries and fears, panic even maybe, and yet you're responsible for 80 people getting off that plane safely. I can't imagine how difficult that and stressful that must have been, but they did their jobs really well.
And we'll have more details, including early analysis, but it is very rare, apparently, for a fuselage like in an aircraft like that to stay intact, even on a hard landing that turned into a crash landing.
As your expert once said when we were talking last half hour, he says it's very unusual for there not to be damage to the fuselage, but thank goodness there wasn't.
And last night in Boston Garden, it was supposed to be a relatively easy game for the U.S.
Yeah, Sweden had not won a game yet in the Four Nations play.
And they scored, the USA, 31 seconds into the game, and you thought, okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. That was the last time they scored, and they lost 2-1.
Yes, the team captain, Austin Matthews, who's a prolific goal scorer for the Toronto Maple Leafs, did not play last night. He had some type of upper body discomfort, they called it. And then during the game, one of the Tkachuk brothers wound up leaving the game in the second period. So two of your top players are not even in action. And by the way, I don't know if you caught any of the game with Canada and Finland yesterday afternoon, but the Finns were down going into the third period, and they came back. They made it 3-4, and then Sidney Crosby got hold of a loose puck and put it in the empty net to quell the rebellion.
And so that sets up the championship game and a rematch between Canada and the USA on Thursday night at 8 in the Garden in Boston.
I can hardly wait to see the result first and foremost, but also to see the ratings. I think this is going to generate some good ratings this time around.
Especially after the last time they met over the weekend, Saturday night, there were three fights to begin the game.
Mm-hmm.
So
I wonder if that's going to be, if they've gotten past that and they're just going to play hockey.
Well, we're going to find out Thursday night at 8.
What do you think? You think that they can beat them twice?
I don't know. It's a tall order. My money would be on the kid.
Yep.
Doing something special. Number 87. That would be your Penguins captain.
We'll see, won't we?
Sidney Crosby. 5 every afternoon. The story's driving the news. Brought to you by ServiceMaster of Greater Pittsburgh. Demand the yellow van with Colin Dunlap this afternoon. That's 5 o'clock. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen. IRS scam making news, as a lot of people, if you got your W-2 from your place of employment or 1099s or whatever you needed to file your taxes, people are getting this text from the IRS claiming that you got a $1,400 stimulus check coming. No, you don't. The Better Business Bureau says criminals are impersonating the IRS to trick people into sharing personal information. So taxpayers, many are falling for it since the IRS announced in December they'd be sending money to those who missed out during the pandemic.
That's right, yep.
So, you know, criminals are taking advantage of people waiting to hear how that's going to happen.
This is the same kind of an approach that we get with the scammers who tell people that they've got an unpaid toll of the turnpike, you know.
Which are coming in text now in droves. I've gotten several, and one of the tip-offs is it's from another state.
Right.
Like, I haven't driven in Massachusetts in this case, but these IRS texts, ignore them. In fact, you can hit a report and delete option on many phones.
Yeah, I know on mine I can say delete and then report.
And by the way, if you are to receive some money, it will be automatic and you do not have to, and the IRS will not text you, by the way, to tell you to pay them or that they're going to give you money. Do wow. not share your personal information.
So devious. Just so devious.
I mean, you have to stay alert. There are options where I know some older social media users who like to play games, say, you know, on their phone or iPad. Something will pop up and it'll say you're running out of storage. And then you click on something. And if you put your credit card information in there,
oh no,
it'll keep, yeah, it'll just yeah. keep hitting you like $6.99 a week. So $6.99, someone might not think, they'd think that's all they have to pay or even a month, and it's going to give them all this extra storage.
Almost
that's
$400 a year.
That's a yeah. scam, right? And then there'll be multiple opportunities for thieves to get into your credit card. And while we're on that subject, Facebook is owned by Meta, is not stopping deepfake celebrity images like they apparently had hoped to from being posted and shared over all of its platforms. Meta finally removed a dozen fraudulent photos of some famous celebrities like Scarlett Johansson, Ariana Grande, tennis player Maria Sharapova. Totally fake, deepfake, artificial intelligence type images. And it's hard to know anymore what is and isn't real on social media. It just is.
Yeah.
Because they're getting better and better. I saw one with Patrick Mahomes, who was throwing his teammates under the bus, but it wasn't really him saying it. Mm. And there's a lot of people that just buy into it. And it's just creating this whole narrative of negativity.
It's a Wild West kind of situation right now. You know, almost unregulated in some places. And there's this back and forth between, you know, free speech and, you know, freedom of expression. But this kind of stuff sounds criminal to me, especially if you're talking about a celebrity whose likeness and image is a moneymaker for them. You know, you get somebody turning out material that generates traffic and clicks, and then they wind up cashing in. That doesn't seem right to me. Somebody making a YouTube video, like coming up with a Pat Mahomes fake like that and then getting a million views on YouTube. That's worth bucks.
Whatever happened to the good old days when you got an email saying that a king somewhere in Africa was going to give you
right
$35 million?
It was just so obvious.
If you could just give us your bank account, we could just deposit that money for you, right?
Yay.
Those were the old days, right? The Nigerian king fraud on email. We're probably some of the first scams that ever popped up on, you know, electronic media. But, you know, you get emails, too, that look very real. You got to pay really close attention.
Yeah. Don't click on any links. That's the first and foremost best rule I can think of. Unless you know, unless you're positive that you're being said. For example, if you're on a website and you're already doing business with, like, say, a bank, and you want to change your password, they'll send you a link to click on, you know, to go change your password. That's okay. But if you're getting an unsolicited email telling you to click on a link, probably not a good idea.
There was a guy who knocked on a door, handed someone a note, and said, erase all your files. I don't know what that's called. That was a Amish virus. For many schools has grown to over 100. We have the entire list available for you at kdkaradio.com. Larry Richard with Anchorman Paul Rasmussen and at the National Weather Service, meteorologist Matt Broody. Matt, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
The deep freeze, much of the nation feeling much of this Arctic air mass, so we're at single digits now with that wind. It feels like it's below zero. How long is this going to last?
Yeah, it was chilly overnight, wasn't it? We got, looks like one more night of this chill coming up tonight. We'll see the lows dipping into the upper single digits again with the wind chills. Maybe not quite as cold as this morning and last night, but still dipping into the negative single digits overnight tonight. And then we'll be gradually warming up into the teens starting tomorrow night and Thursday night to close out the week.
Matt, I was looking at a forecast today, this morning before we got started, and I was astounded by some of the low temperatures that we have coming up in Oklahoma and Texas.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we're just getting this, you know, big dip in what we call a trough sinking out of Canada, and it's allowing all of this cold air to spill over the northern half of the United States and really bringing some below average temperatures to a lot of the country right now.
I think a temperature in the 20s in San Antonio, even though it is February, is unheard of.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you think when you're that far south, you're, you know, heading for vacation, heading for warmer weather. But yeah, not been the case these last couple of days.
Plus, what is really rare, as you know, Matt, tornadoes in the south this time of year, stretching across from basically New Orleans to Atlanta.
Yeah. Usually we see that activity only start to pick up here in the next month or two and head out, you know, through the rest of the spring when we start to see our severe weather season pick up. So definitely been seeing some active patterns, not only the cold, but the snow and the freezing rain and the tornadoes, like you mentioned, over the south in the last week.
You guys have a cafeteria there at the National Weather Service office. You kind of all gather and discuss what are we going to tell these people?
I wish, because I'm an eater, so I wish we had food in here all the time. But we do. We're all nerds here, so we like to talk about, you know, the weather. If there's nothing going on here, we like to talk about somewhere else.
Oh, Matt, I'm looking at the long-term forecast, and we just have to be patient for a few more days, and things start to get back up into a normal range in terms of highs and lows.
We do, yeah. Normal right now is right around 40 degrees. So it looks like by the time we get to the end of the weekend and ahead of the next week, we'll be pushing in that direction. So if you're not a fan of this cold, just keep holding on for the next couple of days, and we'll be warming up a little bit.
Well, we appreciate the work you do, Matt. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
You got it. Matt Brudy with the National Weather Service office here in Pittsburgh. It's just off of the airport area.
Yeah.
Moon.
And Larry, I would just like to repeat my gratitude to whoever it was that invented the two things that I'm using with joy, with glee every day.
Let me guess. Heated steering wheel.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. And?
A heated seat.
Remote start.
Oh. You know, that's when, if you got remote start, a day like this is gold.
Man, it sure is.
Hey, I wanted to share, and there's more news coming in about this Delta flight number 4819 from Minneapolis that experienced a hard landing, then a crash in Toronto in the airport. 80 people on board survived, 18 injured, 3 critically, 1 child. But John Nelson told CNN after the crash, upside down in his seat, what happened next?
It was mass chaos. I was upside down. The lady next to me was upside down. We kind of let ourselves go and fell to hit the ceiling, which is surreal feeling. And then everybody was just like, get out, get out, get out. We could smell like jet fuel. Even now I smell like jet fuel. And then we just crawled out the back of the airplane. The firefighters, the EMTs were there right away.
And the wings had broke off. And the wings, as you reported, Paul, were designed to do just that because that's where the fuel tanks are.
And that's where the fire broke out, was where the wings were. So they were able to get to those, and they were isolated from the fuselage. Thank goodness. And I know how traumatic it must have been, you know, to be listening to how people are talking about what they went through. But thank goodness all 80 people were able to get off that plane. There were 18 injuries, 3 critical, but still. Not the kind of result you would expect in a situation like that, right?
Pretty miraculous. We'll have more on that coming up at the top of the hour. And next, we're going to talk to Senator Jay Costa about the budget for Pennsylvania and how the federal funding may impact it next. And as we just detailed, high today of just 20 degrees. We're at 9. Feels like 1 below zero. Joining us on the Big K Morning Show, Senator Jay Costa, and want to talk money. Senator, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thanks for having me.
You know, we go through this process where, and you could explain how the federal government and the funding from the federal government affects when you're budgeting for the state. A very important part of the process. It seems like a lot of that is up in the air.
That is correct. When we budget each year, the general fund budget this year, the governor's proposing, is about $51.4 billion. But coupled with that and intertwined with all of our line items is federal money that makes its way to Pennsylvania. probably around the same amount, $50 billion. So when we conclude our budget process at the end of June, hopefully, with a balanced budget, it incorporates both federal and state money. And the problem we're facing right now is the uncertainty about what's happening in Washington, D.C., particularly as it relates to, for example, the next 4 months, how we're going to end this fiscal year, June 30th, but also what we're going to look to have coming in 25 and 26 fiscal year as well. So federal government plays a key role in terms of how we appropriate.
Senator Costa, with regard to that federal money, what do you anticipate is going to happen? I know it's a big question mark, but what are the tea leaves telling you?
Well, there's a couple of tea leaves that I think we are seeing. I think one is the dismantling of the Department of Education potentially could have some impact on our education funding. The biggest area that we're concerned about is really the biggest part of our state budget, and that is what I call human service programming, particularly in the Medicaid space. Medicaid experienced close to a $2 billion increase for human services, the largest cost driver we have. And that's a concern because there's a lot of talks about cutting the reimbursement rate, for example. Right now, for example, on the Medicaid expansion program, which is part of the Affordable Care Act, we have about 800,000 people receiving health care coverage, which the state subsidizes and the federal government subsidizes. Federal government gives us 90% of the cost. They want to ratchet that back to the traditional Medicaid cost of about 54-55%. So there alone, it's going to be a major impact on resources that we have coming in for that group of folks. The second part is the regular Medicaid program, looking at maybe reductions, capping at a certain amount or doing it in a block grant. It impacts what we receive, but also more importantly, it impacts the quality of the services that folks will be receiving. And we have no idea how much we're going to get. And then that impacts what we would be able to have on our menu of benefits for Medicaid patients. So that's the largest piece of uncertainty, I think, right now that we've identified.
And healthcare systems also count on reimbursements from the federal government. And all of that's up in the air when organizations are trying to put budgets together. Any indication of when you'll get kind of final word on that, or is it still up in the air and just gray?
I think it's still pretty fluid. You know, we hear things, whether it be executive orders or memorandums come out and then they're paused or the court would pause them. I think we'll have a better handle sometime March whenever the continuing resolution in Washington has to be done. I think both Congresses, both the House and the Senate have been working on different versions to get a continuing resolution done and what the impact would look like. We'll probably have a better handle at that point in time, but it's going to continue for months as we go forward. And it's really frustrating for us because we start our hearings today on appropriation hearings to figure out how we're going to spend whatever we have coming in. And we're starting with the revenue secretary, which I think is important to get a better handle on that. So yesterday in my caucus, we had a conversation with budget secretary and also the revenue folks and the general counsel to discuss all these issues. Just so we have a better handle on where things are at. And I think it's still fluid and it's still a little bit of chaos right now.
Senator, appreciate your time as always. Keep us posted. Thank you.
Thanks, Larry. Take care, guys.
Senator Jay Costa on the Big K Morning Show. It seems like everybody's budgets are kind of up in the air right now, Paul.
I wonder how much time they'll have to adjust to what happens in Washington. Will there be enough time between, say, the first of the year in June or whenever that gets starts to shake out?
Right. There needs to be some finality to what the numbers are so that they can figure out how to handle it and what to do moving forward. And we'll keep you posted. Thanks, Senator Costa, for being here. To the bitter cold, more than 100 schools have checked in with delays, two-hour delays primarily, and we have the entire list available at kdkradio.com. Well, details are starting to emerge about this Delta Flight 4819 from Minneapolis to Toronto that crashed on the runway, and a new video shows. Paul, it looks like comes in hard and the wingtip dips.
Yes.
And then
you see a black cloud going up into the air as this plane starts to roll over on the side of the runway. You can't see much because it's a long distance shot, but you can see a fireball, and that would be, I guess, the wing separating from the fuselage, and then having the fire beginning at that point. So when you see that video and you consider the fact that the thing wound up on its back with minimal fuselage damage and all 80 people survived, you go, wow.
Exactly. And checked in with an aviation expert and he'll join us at some point here this morning. He's in demand right now with the networks, but he has been a crash analyst for many years. He's a pilot, air traffic controller at one point, and he said he's never seen this, where the fuselage has stayed intact upside down. And with more details, CBS's Jared Hill.
A new look at a terrifying landing. Video obtained by TMZ shows the moment a Delta Airlines plane crashed, then flipped over at Toronto Pearson International Airport Monday afternoon.
Our plane crashed.
Later, a passenger cell phone video shows the plane upside down with the wings and tail ripped off.
All of a sudden, everything just kind of went sideways. And then next thing I know is kind of a blink and I'm upside down, still strapped in.
Toronto's fire chief says at least 18 people, including a child, were taken to the hospital. But miraculously, all 80 people on board, four crew and 76 passengers, survived.
There was no loss of life, and this is in due part to our heroic and trained professionals.
Now, the investigation into what went wrong. The plane, operated by Endeavor Air, flying from Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport, crashed around 2:30 in the afternoon. Meteorologists say there was blowing snow in Toronto, visibility down to 6 miles, with winds gusting up to 40 miles per hour.
It's really important that we do not speculate. What we can say is the runway was dry and there was no crosswind conditions.
Canada's Transportation Safety Board is taking the lead on the investigation. A small team of U.S. investigators from the National Transportation Safety Board and Federal Aviation Administration will assist in the probe. Delta CEO said in a statement that the hearts of the entire global Delta family are with those affected. This is the latest in a string of high-profile aviation crashes in North America over just the past couple of weeks, as the Trump administration focuses on the FAA.
CBS's Jared Hill, and on that aircraft, survivor John Nelson, who also shot some video on his phone, Paul, which has gone viral around the world, described the moment of impact with CNN.
It happens so quickly, right? You hit, there's this like giant like pop crack, you know, it's this like super loud bang kind of thing happens, and then everything just goes literally sideways, and it happens so fast that I just remember like kind of pulling myself in and trying not to hit my head against anything. And luckily our flight attendants and everything were helpful for us.
Imagine trying to get out of an overturned aircraft. You're walking on the ceiling and probably trying to avoid all the debris that's been thrown around, right?
In the immediate shock of what had just happened and you're upside down, then you smell the jet fuel.
Yeah.
That's where additional panic would set in for a lot of people, but they credit the flight attendant team for getting everybody off the aircraft.
And as you pointed out earlier this morning, there is some video of people exiting the plane, making their way out, and you can hear the flight attendants taking command and getting people out.
And telling people, leave your stuff, leave it.
Yep.
And I mentioned in one of the videos, as you see the passengers come out of the inverted fuselage, one person dragging a carry-on bag. It's just
human nature. It changes my attitude a lot about flying. When I walk on a plane, I often think now in recent years when I see the flight attendants that this person could save my life.
Yeah, 100%. And in this case, pretty miraculous. So far, all 80 passengers on board have survived. We'll continue to bring every Tuesday at this time, we check in with another medical professional brought to you by Independence Health System Expert Care here. And today, happy to introduce you to Dr. Richard Begg, who is the Medical Director, Cardiovascular Service Line for Butler and Clarion Hospitals. Doc, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm cold, Doc. Very cold.
Yeah, you and me both.
That said, it's still Heart Month, and we've talked about this when it comes to men's health primarily, but women's heart health. How is cardiovascular disease different in women versus men, or is it?
It absolutely is. I think to put it all in perspective first, death from cardiovascular disease exceeds all cancers. It's the number one cause of death for both men and women. And yet the two are entirely different in terms of the way that they present. Women have a much more acute presentation, often presenting their first time with a heart attack as more so than men. And when they do have a heart attack, they're more likely to die from the heart attack. They're more likely to have a second heart attack within a year, more likely to have a sudden death within the year. So for women, it's a really sort of catastrophic event and really requires significant attention, I guess, from the standpoint of the medical care.
And you can see Dr. Begg via our streaming video at kdkradio.com, presented by Metropolitan Window Company. We're at a technology point, Doc, where you can see you on the radio. I know when you and I grew up, that wasn't possible. But
yeah, it's also very dangerous, right?
Yes. What are common risk factors? I think a lot of people are familiar with the top ones that increase your chance of having a heart attack.
Well, I'll tell you, Larry, it's really interesting because if we look at the risk factors, which many of us know, right? Smoking, diabetes, high blood pressure, genetics, age, all of those things play into both men, you know, both men and women. The interesting thing about it is that when we begin to talk about women and their presentation, they present so unlike men at times in terms of even if they don't have a heart attack, they present with atypical symptoms. It may be chest discomfort. It may be chest heaviness, maybe indigestion, maybe aching, maybe jaw pain, a whole slew of different presentations that are often quite honestly hard to sort out. And even from a woman's standpoint, hard to know that anything's going on. They have a tendency to sort of ignore the symptoms. Oh, I had a little indigestion or a little tightness in my chest. So risk factors become very important because when we start to assess someone's symptoms of chest discomfort, we have to look at it in the context of their risk, right? Because obviously if they have a lot of risk factors, they're much more likely to have underlying coronary disease. And that helps to interpret these sort of atypical symptoms at times. And I think that's really, really important. And of course, I think if we look at this from the standpoint of the United States, we are the best country in the world in taking care and fixing a problem. Where we need to do a little bit more work is preventing that problem. It's the old prevention, you know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And that's really probably where a lot of our focus is in terms of coronary disease, both in men and women. And when we look at it, it's very interesting that there are certain risk factors when we compare the genders that are interesting. So cholesterol levels in women on average are higher than men. Diabetes levels are about similar between the two of them. Their obesity levels in women exceed obesity levels in men. So there's a lot to talk about in terms of preventing coronary disease in women and men. And I think some surprising information, because one wouldn't think this. But over 50% of women, as they get older, have inadequate exercise. So there's a lot to be said for managing prevention. And I think that's where a lot of our efforts are going right now.
We're with Dr. Richard Begg, Medical Director, Cardiovascular Service Line, Butler Clarion Hospital's part of Independence Health System. So what are the steps that women can take to decrease their risks from suffering a heart attack?
Well, it's managing all of those manageable risk factors. Some aren't manageable, right? Somebody has a genetic predisposition. Not much you can do about that, but you certainly cannot smoke. You can make sure. If you ask me, just from my experience, probably the number one thing all of us can do, and especially women, is activity, lose weight. Something like obesity, in which we're the most obese country in the Western world, leads to things or aggravates things like diabetes, high blood pressure. So it really be, I think, activity levels are important. Managing weight is important. Not smoking is important. Knowing your cholesterol is important. All of those things put together are the things that we should be looking at in our lifestyle modifications to help prevent the development of coronary disease.
As a stereotype, Doc, men, women, is it more likely that women, when they feel like they have an issue, come see a doc as opposed to guys kind of sloughing it off sometimes?
I don't know about that. I mean, I think that you know, you run both sides of the gamut, right? The guys sometimes are big, strong guys and sort of these alpha guys who, it's okay, it's a little bit of this and that, and they don't come. Women, on the other hand, often have a lot more varied symptoms. But sometimes they have a tendency to say, that's probably nothing. I don't want to bother a doctor and ask them these questions. And I would just stress the fact that I think all of us in the medical profession would tell you we'd much rather have someone come in and say to them, look, don't worry about it, it's okay, as opposed to say, gosh, I wish you would have come here last week so we could have done a little bit more. So it's really, really critical that when you have symptoms, no matter how mild they are. So just again, quick examples of this. You know, women often come in, they'll say, I used to go up and down the stairs 5 times a day doing things. And now I do once and I have to stop at the top of the stairs. I'm just worn out. I can't go on. I got to rest. That can be a symptom. Not necessarily is a symptom, but can. So things like that, that people just say, well, maybe I'm out of shape. Maybe, you know, I've been inactive for a while. Now it's best to seek care and counsel in that scenario.
Regular checkups, right, Doc?
Regular checkups. There you go.
All right. We appreciate your time, and please thank your medical team for all the work you do year round.
I will pass that on, Larry. We appreciate it.
You got it. Dr. Richard Begg, who is the medical director, cardiovascular service line, Butler and Clarion Hospitals, all part of Independence Health System expert care. 100 school delays due to the extreme cold. We have the entire list available for you at kdkradio.com. Yesterday afternoon in Toronto, another jet crash. This on landing, Delta Flight 4819 with 80 people on board, hit the deck hard, and survivor John Nelson describes the landing to CNN.
It was a typical flight from Minneapolis to Toronto, and we were coming in, and I did notice that, like, the winds were super gusty, the snow had kind of blown over the runways. And so coming in, it just, it was routine, but like it was noticeable that the runways were kind of in a weird condition. And when we hit, it was just a super hard, like I hit the ground and the plane went sideways. And I believe we skidded like on our side and then flipped over on our back where we ended up. There was like a big fireball out this left side of the plane. And when we got finished, it was I was upside down. Everybody else was there as well. Thankfully, everybody was okay. But we tried to get out of there as quickly as possible. And then shortly thereafter, I got done filming the video. There was another explosion, but luckily the firefighters got out of there.
Again, 80 on board, 18 injured, 3 critically, including 1 child. But so far, no one has perished. And pretty remarkable after you see the end result. Joining us is an aviation crash expert. He's a pilot, engineer, an air traffic controller at times, air safety investigator, including the latest shuttle disaster. Dan Diggins joins us. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
We had spoken to you about the crash over the Potomac in Washington. Didn't expect to have to call on your expertise again, but when I texted you last night, something you wrote me resonated that you've not seen an issue where a fuselage stays intact upside down in a crash.
No, I have not. This was very, and I've investigated hundreds of accidents and never seen anything like this. It was quite remarkable to have the fuselage stay intact like that. I talked to a couple of my colleagues last night, and they don't remember ever seeing anything like this either. So it's quite remarkable, and I don't quite know what happened, but I have a pretty good idea that what could have happened here.
Looking at the video this morning that we're getting from Toronto, it's a long view of the actual crash itself. It looks like a hard landing to me. It looks like the plane is, you know, tilting more toward starboard. Don't know if a wingtip caught or not, or the gear collapsed, but right after that, you get the black smoke and the wings pop off, and I mean, it's quite a sight to see.
Yeah, my sense is they were coming in runway 23, which is means 230 degrees to southwest direction. The wind was out of the west, 27280, 35 to 45 miles an hour. And how an aircraft stays lined up with the runway, they do what's called a crab. They, even though the runway is heading 230 when the wind's off your right like that, you're actually heading 250, something like that, to maintain alignment with the runway. Now, the wheels aren't lined up with the runway. The wheels are lined up 20 degrees off the runway, so you have to kick in left rudder at the last second and tip the and bank to the right to get the wheels lined up with the runway and then put it down. And when the wind's blowing that hard, you have to get it on the runway. You can't stop it until you get it on the runway. So it's quite commonplace to have a hard landing in conditions like that. And if you have an extremely hard landing, then you bounce and you go back up in the air. You might be in the air at that point, but you're not necessarily flying. They may not have enough flying speed at that point. Probably what happened after the hard landing and the bounce up, they're trying to correct it, and they probably caught the right wingtip. And once they caught the right wingtip, then the accident sequence started.
And, Dan, as you know, there'll be a whole series of experts, people like yourself, NTSB will be involved. What do you say to people who, after we've had these series of air disasters, really, about the safety of flying overall as a pilot?
It's really strange to have this so many accidents in such a short period of time. We've gone years and years without anything because the system is quite good. We manage the risk quite well. The airlines have figured out how to manage and train people and how to do maintenance. The FAA has figured out how to oversee these operations. So I don't think any of the accidents are related at all. I can't put anything together, but I feel like the system is quite sound, and I don't think anybody has anything to be afraid of.
You know, planes take off and land at airports all across the United States and Canada, you know, the world, you know, by the tens of thousands every day. And yet our job is in the media is to report on the aberrations, the things that take place that are unusual. And these type of things really grab people, they grab their attention. And it, in this process magnifies, Dan, I think, what's going on, but it kind of also obscures how safe flying can be.
Yeah, again, it's a, you know, I can't say safe or unsafe. We just try to manage the risk, and we've done really well. The whole system, when I say we, I mean the whole system worldwide, the aircraft manufacturers, the engine manufacturers, the avionics manufacturers, the airport authorities, we all have standards that we try to meet, and we try to manage that risk. So the chance of something is so improbable, but we understand that it could happen. When we design airplane parts, like we design them to, it's going to fail one out of a billion times. Well, one out of a billion times is one time. So that's called managing risk.
And I had a pilot tell me once, Dan, and I never forgot it. I took a flying lesson once. The first time he came, he said, the most dangerous thing about flying is driving to this airport. So just want to kind of settle people down on that aspect of it.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. Some airports worse than others.
Yes, sir. Dan, really appreciate your time and expertise. Thank you, sir.
All right, Larry. Have a good day and stay warm.
Dan Diggins on the Big K Morning Show. And after the news at the top of this hour, Paul Rasmussen and I will talk to Peter Greenberg from CBS. More details emerging from the Delta crash in Toronto yesterday afternoon.
Peter is the travel expert for CBS, right?
Absolutely. And coming up next month, Feed the Need, our Odyssey stations gear up for a big effort every year to help the Pittsburgh Greater Community Food Bank, or the Greater Pittsburgh Community Food Bank. And my friend Lisa Scales is the CEO. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning, Larry.
Obviously, this is a year-round effort for you and your team. And question for you about the federal freeze on funding. Does this affect in any way the work that you do?
It does. We're preparing for all possible outcomes given the uncertainty of current federal funding negotiations. the SNAP, which is the number one line of defense to hunger, is a federal food assistance program. That's in jeopardy of being cut or restricted, limited in some way, as is the USDA commodities. The biggest way the federal government supports food banks is providing us with good, nutritious food.
Any idea when you might get word on how much funding, if there is a cut, or how much funding you will get or won't?
We're looking. There's some budget resolutions that are pending mid-March. It possibly could go into mid-April as well. But we do know that there is a local food purchase assistance program that's currently frozen. And we provide $130,000 worth of food each month through that important program. That money is only available to us till next month. So we're now starting to cut back on the amount that we're spending.
Lisa, here we are 3 years removed from the pandemic, and yet I continue to hear from people in food banks in our area, including you, that the demand is only going up. How is that?
Well, many of the people we serve, especially seniors and families with children, are struggling to make ends meet, put food on the table every day because of the cost of groceries and other essential household costs that they have. So not surprising that when times are tough, that people will come to a food bank or food pantry for food assistance.
And what is the need in our region right now today?
Well, we serve annually about 300,000 individuals. That's about 120,000 to 130,000 people every month. And that's
100 schools have posted two-hour delays for the most part. There are some exceptions. We have the entire list available for you at kdkradio.com. With our school closing and the KDKA Radio,
probably the best way is to just make a donation.
Joining us from CBS is travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Team.
Get a little more details,
right,
and if there's
for
anything
dollar,
new to report on
donated,
the Delta Flight 4819 crash in Toronto.
Well,
Peter,
we'll
good
morning.
Continue our efforts
good morning,
and help
sir.
Any way we can.
As,
we support you and thank you,
as
Lisa.
As of 2:30 yesterday,
we've seen a series of videos released,
so
some by the passengers,
Lisa Scales, CEO
inside the fuselage coming out of the aircraft. And now we have a pretty good video that has surfaced that shows the actual crash landing. And what else do we know about what has happened in Toronto yesterday?
Well, we do know that there were severe winds gusting up to 40 knots. What we have to figure out is whether or not this plane was able to operate within that envelope in terms of its performance criteria. But more importantly than that, the investigators have been very lucky in this case because you have 80 eyewitnesses. Everybody got out of that plane, number one. Number two, they're going to be able to retrieve the cockpit voice recorder that's going to give them the last 30 minutes of conversation both from the cockpit and within the cockpit. They're hopefully going to get the flight data recorder. That's in the tail. But as you can see from those pictures, the tail was basically sheared off, as were the wings. And the most remarkable thing about this crash, and the video will help to support that, is that when it actually hit and spun around and turned over, it ended up completely level but inverted with no breakup of the aircraft and no post-crash fire. That in itself was remarkable.
Peter, we've had a report and also a guest earlier this morning that has mentioned that the wings are designed to come off of the fuselage in situations like this. Is that your understanding as well?
Well, they may not be designed to, but that's what usually happens. You saw the crash in Scottsdale, Arizona last week where the landing gear broke off during the landing and the wing was dragging, did not break off, and careened into another plane. So it doesn't always happen that way. But in this particular case, I mean, everything combined to create, in terms of a catastrophe, the most survivable situation you could have, given the circumstances.
Yeah, we talked to an aircraft safety expert last hour, and he said he'd never seen a fuselage of this type of aircraft stay intact, inverted like that. So that's pretty extraordinary. And we were hearing credits to the flight crew, the flight attendants who helped get people out of the plane as quickly as possible.
Indeed. And, you know, what helped them, of course, is this is a relatively small fuselage, so that the distance, even in an inverted situation, from hanging from the floor facing the ceiling of the plane and to the ceiling is only a few feet, as opposed to a big wide-body plane. That helped a lot of people get them out of the plane earlier and faster.
Peter, is it your understanding that the passengers and crew all had to clear out through the front hatches?
Most of them got out through the front hatches. There was an initial small fire over the wing exit. That was quickly extinguished. As you saw, the crash trucks got there very quickly and were able to put foam on it to neutralize any other possibility. But there was a lot of aviation fuel on the ground. They got lucky there as well.
And Peter, you travel all the time. That's your life. Did these series of incidents have you pause at all, or you still feel very comfortable? Because a lot of people get anxious naturally when they see something like this happen.
Well, I'm naturally concerned when this happens, having covered these incidents for decades. But I should tell everybody that if you take a look at the sheer numbers here, we've just celebrated the 30 safest years in commercial aviation since commercial aviation began. Last year, about 4.4 billion people flew around the planet, and we're dealing with a handful of incidents with remarkably few fatalities. Those are overwhelming odds. The challenge now is not whether we can improve that statistic, but whether we can maintain it. And with all the other incidents that we're dealing with, including the issues relating to the FAA and the government and safety enforcement and regulation, those issues still need to be addressed.
Peter, we always appreciate your expertise and time. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
All right, from CBS, Peter Greenberg, who does a great job in his travel reports, too.
You know, Larry, I would be curious to be involved in the actual investigation in this time around. And the reason why is I would like to know what these investigators are interested in finding out first. There's so much, as Peter just told us, there's so much, uncorrupted evidence, eyewitness accounts, the flight data recorders, both the audio and the data itself. All of these things, the videos that are going to emerge. Toronto Pearson Airport, we're only seeing one long-distance shot of this crash. They've got, no doubt, several angles on what happened on that runway yesterday.
But the last one that emerged is pretty clear and close up enough to see the actual entire crash process.
What we were seeing yesterday was, the aftermath, the fuselage lying upside down next to the runway. But what we're seeing in this new video this morning is the plane coming down, making contact with the ground, and a huge plume of white smoke and a fireball coming up. And when you see that, and then you realize that there were just 18 people injured, and all 80 people made it off alive, it is a miracle.
Especially when you understand the gravity of what could have happened so easily to change that narrative. We'll keep you posted here on the Big K Morning Show. Do you know someone in need of a full house heating system? Well, now is the time with the temperatures. McVeigh Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling is donating one full house gas heating system to a family in need, and you have an opportunity to nominate a deserving family in your life. Just go to kdkradio.com. We're going to do this process through the end of the month, February 28th. So if you want to nominate a neighbor or someone you know that really needs a furnace, please take advantage of this opportunity. Can't imagine being without heat, Paul, right now.
I can't imagine not being able to afford replacing a broken furnace, right? I mean, we're talking about a big ticket item here.
And in many cases, that is the issue. You're rolling along, maybe a razor-thin budget. Prices go up. We see that all the time. And then, suddenly you find yourself underwater. Financially. So anything that you can do to help. And, Marty does a great, we kid Marty, but the Get Marty program and the things he does are
special. I don't know how many hundreds of people have been helped.
Don't get me wrong.
I don't think that they keep track. I don't think they keep, there's no scorecard back there in his office, but he just keeps doing it, doesn't he?
Don't get me wrong. Marty's a pain in the ass. But he has a huge redeeming side of him that, for helping people.
Yep, he cares.
So we appreciate that. KDKRadio.com. Social Security Administration. The acting commissioner stepped down, Michelle King, from her role. A Trump administration official confirmed that to CBS. King was replaced by Leland Dudek, who oversaw the SSA Fraud Investigation Office, and then she resigned, according to an official White House spokesperson. Harrison Fields on Monday wrote on social media about this, quote, President Trump has nominated a highly qualified and talented Frank Bisignano to lead the Social Security Administration. Why is this important, everybody? Whoever they put in there, you want to make sure they get it right and eliminate fraud, but not cut Social Security, because there's so many people who work their lives to support it are counting on it.
You know, the other day when he was in the Oval Office, Elon Musk claimed that his the initial attempts of the Department of Government Efficiency to see what's going on with Social Security found that there were people over the age of, quote-unquote, people over the age of 150 who were receiving Social Security benefits. And, you know, there's so many payments that are being made and going in all these different directions. And certainly there has to be some amount, whether it's a large, you know, or small amount, but there has to be some. Perhaps the people at DOGE will be able to help the Social Security people track things down more easily with the software and the algorithms that they're able to work with.
You absolutely, and I think parties aside, everyone wants to see waste cut.
Yes.
The process of how that happens is what's in question right now on a lot of fronts. But there have been, and there always is in government, a lot of fat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think one of the examples that has popped up in recent weeks as an example of how inefficient government can be at times, right up in Butler County, where they're storing all these federal employees' pension fund records. They're all in paper, you know, in manila folders, being stored in what amounts to an old mine. And that seems to me, with the power that we have, the computing power that we have, it seems kind of odd to me that we would be doing that still. And it makes me wonder, you know, what kind of, you know, how we've heard the stories about the FAA not having the infrastructure to handle. At times we've had these breakdowns in the air traffic control system because the equipment they're using is outdated. This is the kind of thing that I would like to see rectified as a taxpayer. I'd like to see them using the better tools that are available because they're more efficient and less expensive and clunky.
And then another question is, and there have been many, you know, it's just the timing, and once it's sorted through, this is all, it's hard to keep track of.
Oh, it's, yes.
I mean, it's nearly impossible for any individual. Just what most people want to know is, how am I going to take care of my family, right, on a daily basis? I just want to take care of my family. Is this stuff all going to help eventually? We'll find out. There are people going to be hurt in the process, so it'll hopefully sort itself out. Hey, by the way, we had mentioned, obviously, this Delta crash, and this is airline news that's getting buried, as understandably, too, that Southwest Airlines is slashing 15% of its corporate workforce, the first major layoffs in 53 years.
Wow, that's a big story.
It is.
And Southwest has been a very stable organization.
And it would be getting a lot more play if, naturally and understandably, the focus is on the Toronto crash. Southwest eliminating 1,750 jobs, again, 15% of its corporate workforce. The Dallas-based airline said yesterday the job cuts would be focused almost entirely on corporate overhead and leadership positions. So they're making big cuts so they can continue to fly profitably. You ever taken Southwest?
No, I've not. Larry, there's never been an occasion where, you know, they were flying where I was going, you know, in a spot to spot. But someday that will be the case. Southwest is no longer the airline it once was. It's a major airline now instead of a low-cost competitor that's, you know, flying strategically between point to point.
Yeah, and they said they were going to eliminate the way they load the plane. They put you in groups and then call groups into, and you don't have a seat assignment. You just run for the seat.
Well, now they're talking about assigning seats. I don't know where they're at with that, but the airlines are constantly tinkering with the boarding process, if you noticed.
I laugh at some of the low-cost carriers where you have to put a credit card in to pull your tray down. Just kidding. And due to the extreme cold, more than 100 schools have posted delays today. In case you didn't know, available at kdkradio.com anytime. It's Ray's fault. Ray Pentland, KDK Television Chief Meteorologist, joins us. You can see Ray on the radio on our live stream at kdkradio.com, presented by Metropolitan Window Company. Raymond, good morning.
Good morning to you.
I used to get all the time, I used to tease people. I said, when you're doing the weather on television and people recognize you in public, they always have something to say to you, right? Especially when the weather's not so good. True or not?
100% of the time. But I always tell people, if you belittle me for the bad weather, you need to be big me for the good weather.
I had a woman once, and Paul Rasmussen, our anchorman here, would appreciate this. She stopped me in the mall, little tiny woman, and she had an Italian accent. She goes, "Hey, you ruined my daughter's wedding." I said, "What happened?" She said, "It rained." I said, "When?" "Last Saturday." I said, "I said it was going to rain Friday." "Yeah, you never write." So anyway, Ray, this cold snap, it looks like a good part of the country's feeling below normal temperatures, in some cases record setting.
Yeah, this is a, you know, a nice big cold snap. And this month has been sort of in between, where we've been going up and down and up and down. And this is one of those big dips in the jet stream, giving us that real shot of cold air, well below average temperatures. And that's going to be probably the case until we get closer to the weekend, when our temperatures start to come back up. And it does look like some mild weather trying to show up next week. So just a few days of this really cold stuff, and the coldest of it is today, tonight, even into tomorrow.
Ray, you used the words up and down, and so that leads to the next question for me about this roller coaster of hot and cold weather. Are we done with polar vortexes for the rest of the year?
We're in February, and March can always give us a shot of cold air. I think the trends are generally taking us into warmer air after we get to the second part of this month, or later this month, I should say, and into March. So hopefully we are done with that, because as a cold lover and as a snow lover, I'm ready for some warm and sunshine. We have the sunshine now, but it does, be warned, it invites you outside, but it lets you know that you are not welcome if you're not wearing a coat.
Yeah, it is cold. We're with meteorologist Ray Pentland, KDK TV. That said, March is that four-season month where you get a little bit of everything, but we've seen the weather patterns over the last few years change dramatically, and we really haven't been this cold in about a decade in Pittsburgh.
Oh yeah. This has been a real treat for the winter lovers. And we have had some pretty lackluster winters. We've had the La Nina, and that has just kept winter away for the most part for the past few years. So as soon as we hit January, we flipped the switch and we turned into classic winter mode. And when all is said and done, you know, a classic winter just sort of is in the back of everybody's mind. So they haven't experienced that in a while. So it feels worse than what it is. But it is cold, and it's supposed to be, because it's this time of year. But we kind of clicked into a classic winter mode. And if you missed winter, you know, this is it.
Ray, at single digits, that's pretty much out of whack with the normal temperatures around this time of year. How far off are we?
Typically, we'd be down in the 20s for an average low, and highs would be in the mid to upper 30s. So, yeah, this is well below average. even in the coldest part of the year, when you're down into single digits, that's well below average. Yeah, it's cold. It's cold any way you slice it.
Well, Ray, we always appreciate your time. We'll look for you on KDK television later.
I'll be there.
All right. Ray Pedlin, meteorologist, the chief at KDKA TV, right here in the Big K Morning Show.
Larry, you observed earlier, and I think it's only worth repeating, what's the temperature in Anchorage, Alaska right about now?
Well, I'm glad you asked me, Paul. Right now in Anchorage, Alaska, it is 30 degrees, and we're at 8. So the misnomer mentally of Alaska is going to be a lot colder than we are ain't true.
That's what I call a cruel hoax.
Let's see. Fort Lauderdale was the hot spot. But even they're going to get some chilly weather. Right now in Fort Lauderdale, it's 74 degrees and sunny.
Man, that sounds nice.
There's a reason. I figured this out this year, why people go there in the winter. And by the way, the full squad of Pirates assembled yesterday in Bradenton at spring training. And guess what? Our first game is coming up.
That's right.
On the 22nd, which is this weekend. And it's, I don't know, there's just, even after all these years, and in spite of all the acrimony about the team, yada, yada, there's something about hearing a baseball game on the radio that I still love.
Me too.
Especially this time of year, because you can kind of dream about going to PNC Park, getting a Permane sandwich and a cold one, and just chilling. Well, chilling's probably a bad phrase. Latest on the plane crash, Toronto Airport. And also in our next hour, we're going to be joined by Lanny Fitteri. We couldn't make contact with him, but we did on President's Day yesterday, and we want to have him join us. He's always got a lot of great information. It's just a lot of fun. Meanwhile, last week was the Westminster Dog Show, and a giant schnauzer was best in show named Monty. And, Paul, you have divined the new list of the top dogs.
Yeah, they've released the website called Visual Capitalist, and the most popular dog breeds in America, the top 10. We'll work our way up the list here. Number 10 would be the German Short-Haired Pointer. And then number 9, the Rottweiler. At 8, the Beagle. And then number 7 would be Bulldog. Number 8, my favorite, the Dachshund, Wiener Dogs. Number 5, Poodles. And number 4, now number 4, number 3, and number 2 are easy ones. They're like no-brainers. German Shepherd, Golden Retriever, Lab, right?
Right.
But number 1, take a guess.
Number one, mm-hmm, is?
It's a very fashionable dog now.
And the number one dog breed is?
The French Bulldog. You know, with those little goofy ears that pop up.
Frenchy foo-foo. You know what Marty loves when people take their dogs into the grocery store in a child bassinet?
Yeah, just he's crazy.
He loves that.
Yep.
Cold, we have over 100 school delays, and you can get the entire list at kdkradio.com anytime at your fingertips. That's kdkaradio.com, and we're looking forward to our next conversation. Ladies and gentlemen, for 33 years, the voice of the Pirates, Lanny Fitteri, now longtime professor for Terry at Waynesburg University, who has mentored so many young people in our industry now. We welcome him to KDK as a presidential aficionado as well. Good morning, Lanny.
Good morning, Larry. Interestingly enough, you played Hail to the Chief just a moment ago. And did you know how that came about, that we play Hail to the Chief for the President of the United States?
I do not.
Well, James K. Polk was a very diminutive president, and his wife Sarah noticed that he would enter the room and nobody would notice him.
I know the feeling.
And so, so she She enlisted the Marine Band to announce the arrival of the president with the old Scottish hymn, Hail to the Chief. That's how that came about.
That's why I love your stuff, because it's just fun and you're very knowledgeable. How did you dedicate so much time to your profession in broadcasting, particularly in baseball, and find time to, you know, learn so much about our presidents?
Well, it started with President Kennedy's inaugural address, and then unfortunately the assassination of President Kennedy. It came at a time that was a very significant time in my life. I was in high school at the time, but you know, as the years went on, I shared my love of presidential history with my son David, and he and I visited a lot of presidential grave sites and presidential homes. And as a matter of fact, my son David and I went to the Bill Clinton inauguration in Washington, D.C. in 1993. By the way, Larry, another thing that happens to me as a baseball announcer was that you spend so much time on the road and you're always looking for ways to occupy time in your mind. And so at one point I put together an all presidential team, baseball team. I guess that's appropriate that I talk a little bit about baseball in light of spring training opening. I put together an all presidential team, and it had to be players with last names that corresponded to presidents. And so can I share that with you?
Yeah, Paul and I would love to hear it. Right, Paul?
Okay, absolutely. My all presidential team. My catcher is Gary Carter, Hall of Famer. First base is Von Hayes after Rutherford B. Hayes. Now, there were two Johnsons that were presidents, Andrew and Lyndon. So there are two Johnsons on my presidential team. Davey Johnson of the Baltimore Orioles at second base. Howard Johnson, who played a good bit with the Mets. In the outfield, Lou Clinton, which is probably not a name that most Major League Baseball, to use your word, aficionados would know about. Willie Wilson is my outfielder. Reggie Jackson is on the all-presidential team. And then for the pitcher, I had a couple of options. I had Whitey Ford, Babe Adams, who, by the way, was one of the great pitchers in Pirate history, who pitched on both the 1909 Pirate Championship team and the 1925 Pirate Championship team. I could have picked Gus Bush, who was the guy that gave up Babe Ruth's last home run at Forbes Field.
That was right so here in Pittsburgh, right?
Yeah, so I had three options there. But here's my favorite part of my all-presidential team. Oh, and by the way, my general manager, just to fudge it a little bit, could have been Harding Peterson, to use a first name there. But here's my favorite part of my all-presidential team. My shortstop on the all-presidential team is John Kennedy. There was, and this is interesting, I think, very much, there was a guy, a player that played for the Washington Senators at the same time that President Kennedy was in the White House.
Wow.
Okay, and listen to this. The John Kennedy who played shortstop for the Washington Senators had the same birth date, not the same year, but the same date as President Kennedy, May 29th.
Now that's details. That's impressive. We're with Lanny Forteri. Yeah, that's great. I love it. And curious, though, in modern presidential history, with Donald Trump back in office, how many presidents were in office for a term, out, and then came back? Or is he the first?
No. Grover Cleveland was president, lost to Benjamin Harrison, and then came back. But here's an interesting note, and I'm going to just one quick quiz for you guys.
All right, we're ready.
How many presidents were elected as sitting vice president? That is, how many guys, how many individuals were vice president at the time that they were elected president? What would you say the number is?
How many vice presidents went on to become president?
How many individuals were vice president at the time that they were elected president?
Lanny, I'm going to say less than six.
What do you think, Larry?
I'll say eight.
Okay, the answer is four. Just four.
And two of them we know about in recent history. They'd be Gerald Ford and George Bush.
Well, no, Gerald Ford.
Oh, he was not elected.
He was not elected president, right.
That's right.
So the four are John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, Martin Van Buren, and then we went 144 years until the next one, George H.W. Bush.
Wow.
So only four men. And what's interesting about it, too, is that since 1960, we've now had four times in which a sitting vice president ran for president and was not elected. Nixon in 60, Humphrey in 68, Gore in 2000, and Kamala Harris, unfortunately, in 2024.
Well, there's the list. And Lanny, you should write a book about this stuff. You really should. I know
so I'm going to write a book on cell phone problems.
Hey, one of my great memories and the first time I really met you and spent time was the first time they sent me to spring training. We went to a place called the Sandbar for dinner. And then I had the pleasure, Paul, of playing golf with Lanny. Lanny drove the cart and I drove a ball just off the fairway into the backyard of this, you know, condominium complex along the golf course. And I went to retrieve the ball, but there was like a pit bull on a leash inside of the circle. And Lanny said, "You better not go get that." You probably don't remember that, but I do, Lanny.
No, I do remember it, Larry. I'll tell you another quick story about Jim Leland. We were playing in San Diego one time. So Jim Leland, Ken Biggerstaff, former trainer, and Gene Lamont, Jimmy's third base coach. Jimmy hit a ball so far left, we drove down to find it, and it was up on the second floor patio of a house. And the woman picked the ball up and said, "Here's your ball. Sir, here's your golf ball."
Not knowing it's Jim Leland.
Lanny.
Yeah, well, I mean, two famous people losing golf balls. I'm sure not the only two famous people to lose golf balls.
Before we get done here, Lanny, I was hoping you would let me ask you a presidential trivia question.
Oh, pop quiz, Lanny.
Uh-oh.
Okay, ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Which U.S. president was the first to be born a U.S. citizen?
I knew this answer. Andrew Jackson.
Close. Martin Van Buren.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Where was George Washington?
Get your hook.
Yeah, George Washington wasn't born in the U.S.
Where was he born?
In England.
I didn't know that. That's terrible. Lanny, thank you, brother. I appreciate it.
Thanks for giving me a second chance, too, Larry.
No worries. No, man, we've all dealt with phone issues. Write a book about presidential history, fun facts.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
The great Lanny Fratteri.
That's a book I'd buy.
Absolutely. Count me in. Live from Atlanta, Georgia, on the Big K Morning Show. Lynn, good morning.
Well, good morning, Larry. It's hard for me to say live from the very warm Atlanta, Georgia, when the high today here is only going to be like 32. So I think we might still have a couple degrees over Pittsburgh, but it's not warm.
Yeah, for Atlanta, that's cold. And
it is.
In the region, you dealt with some really unusual February weather. There were tornadoes in the south.
Yeah. In fact, the other night, and you may recall a couple months ago, I was affected by a local flood when the creek overflowed in the back of my house. And so the rain was so heavy and the lightning and the winds, I literally was sitting up all night looking out the window, checking the Ring camera, because my daughter said she thinks I have PTSD since I went through the first flood. But it was very alarming, and I believe at least one confirmed tornado touchdown here. But it was other places too. And the next morning, there were trees down everywhere.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Very unusual for tornadoes this time of year in particular, even in the south. That said, what's on your radar? So many things to cover.
There are, you know, I want to talk about something that's happening there that really caught my attention. And I'm surprised that we're still having this debate about minimum wage. I know that Governor Shapiro wants to see it go to $15. A lot of small businesses say they can't handle that. What's interesting about that to me, back when I first started doing a talk show on KDKA radio, that was a discussion. That was an issue. So I'm kind of fascinated by the fact that here we are 5 years later and the issues are still there.
And it hasn't come up. Officially, supply and demand has forced it up in many cases. And we talked to a lot of, in particular, restaurant work owners looking for work, employees all the time. So they had to keep pumping up what they paid to get people to work for them.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, so often we think of minimum wage jobs as, I'll use McDonald's or Burger King or a fast food place, as a side job for a high school student, for a college student. But for whatever reason, there are a lot of people who end up working those minimum wage jobs into adulthood, into becoming parents. It's one thing to make that kind of money when you're a student. It's another thing if you're trying to raise a family.
Speaking of being a student, for college-age students right now, a lot of challenges because not sure what grants or loan options there will be supported by the federal government.
Yeah, and that's a tough situation, Larry. When you look at even state schools, the cost of higher education, it has skyrocketed over the last 10, 15 years. I mean, when I think back when I went to college, even when my kids went to college, and I was outraged then by how much college costs. And now here we are 10, 12 years later. I know students that, especially those who went on to get advanced degrees, they're coming out of school at, you know, with $350,000 in loans. And those grants and scholarships make a big deal to students who are struggling just to get their tuition paid.
Yeah, and it's hard right now to plan for a budget. We talked to Senator Jay Costa earlier this morning about the budget for Pennsylvania, but a large line item is what they get from the federal government, which is a big question mark now.
Yeah, you know what? I think this this whole thing with the federal government and these budgets, I think there are a lot of organizations that are in limbo like that. They don't know what to anticipate. While some things have been put on hold, some things have been frozen. I think that a lot of agencies are now saying, you know what? We need to pull back because we don't know what this is going to look like. And on the big scheme of things, you feel like, oh, okay, not a big deal. But we'll use the students, for example. If you're, this is the time of year that parents are already looking ahead to the upcoming fall term, and you don't know what's going to be available. You don't know what help might be there. You can't make decisions.
FAFSA, you had to fill out all that stuff, right?
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
That was maybe, in terms of paperwork, one of the most challenging things I ever had to do was the FAFSA stuff for the kids to go to school.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You think that you're reasonably intelligent, and then you start filling out that form, and you say, I may not be so bright after all,
because
I need help.
We're with Lynn Hayes-Breeland Moore. I know you're in the headquarters of Delta in Toronto. That plane crash yesterday, curious of what the reaction is down there. We'll have more coming. This is the Big K Morning Show. We continue our conversation as we do every Tuesday at this time with Lynn Hayes-Freeland. And you can see Lynn on the radio on our live stream at kdkradio.com, presented by Metropolitan Window Company. So, Lynn, so many things to cover. What else is on your radar?
Well, let's start with this Delta incident. You know, first of all, as a frequent traveler, it is now giving me pause. Even though the good news is there were no fatalities in that crash from yesterday, it's enough to make you stop and think. And I had to go through the next couple of months and say, is this trip necessary? Do I have to make that trip? I don't like feeling that way. It was interesting, however, to watch the local news coverage here in Atlanta, because, of course, Delta is the headquarters is based here.
Right.
And early on, the local television stations just had the statement from Delta and the video from the national feeds of the actual plane. But as the day wore on, one of the things that one of the stations did here was went inside the training capsule for flight attendants and had them walk through what else they do, because a lot of people have this perception. They come by with, you know, ginger ale, coffee, and some snacks, and that's all they do. But they are fully trained to react in a situation like this. So it was pretty cool to look at that and see, oh, this is where they're trained. Oh, this is where they learn how to do it. So I didn't feel as apprehensive about flying. But I am, you know, I'm concerned. We're seeing cutbacks in the FAA, you know, lots of questions about traffic controllers. That's enough to give you pause.
Well, we talked to, and you may have heard, an aviation crash investigator and expert, and he hesitated. He wouldn't use the word, because we asked, and this was a conversation we also had from the tragedy in Washington, D.C. over the Potomac. It was, is it safe to fly? And he said, he didn't use the word safe. He just said managed risk. And statistically, again, to your point, and I understand it, you're much more likely to get into some type of automobile accident as you would an air incident. So, I mean, it certainly happens. But we went for an unbelievable stretch of 15 years in this country. And I think he said
exactly
4 billion people have flown. So statistically, it's actually pretty remarkable. And then we hear of accidents every day in every town and every city in this country, fatal accidents too. And you probably don't think twice.
So get in the car.
You get back in the car and off you go. So, but
absolutely. Well, you know, and I mentioned jokingly PTSD when I was talking about the flooding. But again, when you look at as soon as the first flight crashed outside of Reagan Airport in D.C., I immediately had flashbacks to the U.S. Airways crash just outside of the Pittsburgh airport, because as a news reporter, you're there, you see these things, and all of the emotions connected to that crash came back up for me. And it was, I didn't realize that you kind of take these emotions and you tuck them away, and then something brings them back out. So I was hesitant after the first one to fly.
Yeah, I had a friend on that flight, 427, that was coming from Chicago on a crystal clear day in September that year, and they finally, and it took a long time to figure out, it was a mechanical issue with one of the, it's called an aileron, this automatic system that caused the plane to flip and then dive. And then I also have a friend who worked with the same company at PNC. There were many PNC employees on that flight. He was scheduled to be on that flight and ended up getting rescheduled. And he talked about in the moment, he was disappointed. And then, of course, feels like he was saved. And you just never know. But
you don't. But you know what? I mean, because I am a woman of faith, there are often times that I may be running late. I may be held up in traffic. And I have to remind myself, there may be a reason why I missed that flight or why I'm running late. And I just need to embrace that instead of being frustrated because I missed a flight or I missed a bus.
Well, you've heard the saying, be careful what you pray for. It's also sometimes unbeknownst to you, something happened for a reason.
Well, Lynn, absolutely.
We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday. See you then.
All right. Lynn Hayes-Freeland on the Big K Morning Show. And coming up next, we'll check in with Marty Griffin.